This week on Out of Chicago, we have National Park photographer Chris Nicholson. Welcome to Out of Chicago. This week's going to be pretty awesome. We got one of my friends, Chris Nicholson. He is an amazing wildlife and nature photographer, and he is going to be talking all about shooting in the national parks. He's just written a book. It's Photographing National Parks, and he's going to talk about the book. He's going to talk about some of his favorite parks. He's going to talk about tips for shooting in the parks. It's going to be great. So we'll get into that interview in just a second, but I just want to remind you that if you're here in the Chicago area, we have the Winter Conference coming up. It is February 20th. It's in Grays Lake, Illinois. Simply go to outofchicago.com. You'll see links to it, and it's like $99. It's going to be great. Actually, I have a huge announcement that goes along with it. I almost forgot that, and that is that we have a new speaker added, and that is Canon Explorer of Light, Adam Jones. Adam Jones is... he's similar to Chris. He's an amazing nature and wildlife photographer. He's going to talk all about shooting animals. He's going to talk about shooting landscapes. He's going to do all sorts of stuff. Look for Adam Jones. We'll put a link in the show notes to his website. And he's one of those guys where if you haven't heard of him, as soon as you see his stuff, you'll be like, oh, geez, this guy is, he's amazing. You'll love his stuff. He's got these wonderful images of like tree frogs that he does. He does these workshops where they actually bring all the frogs, lizards, all these things together, and they shoot macro stuff all together. That's fantastic. But he also just talks, doing landscapes and everything else. And I saw him last year in Michigan, and he was phenomenal. So I'm just super excited that last minute we've got Adam Jones added to our lineup for the Winter Conference on February 20th. So that's something that's going to be awesome. He's doing the keynote right in the morning. Everyone comes in. He's going to give the intro. I'll say hi to everyone. And then we split out and we've got classes throughout the day. We've got about 20 other speakers that are going to be talking on all sorts of things. So I really hope you can join us for the Winter Conference, February 20th. It's not too much money. It's going to be tons of fun. And it's going to be amazing. So I will see you there. And if you haven't come to any of our things in the past, I hope you can make it to this one. And I'll get to meet you, shake your hand, say, hey, this is great. Thanks for coming. All right, I'll stop blabbering on. So we're going to do our interview with Chris Nicholson. He's actually going to be teaching at, have you heard? The Out of New York Conference, October 14th and 15th. He's great. You're going to love all the things he has to say here. And this is it. Here we go. All right, Chris Nicholson. All right, I'm here with Chris Nicholson. He is the author of Photographing National Parks. He's a fantastic wildlife and landscape photographer. He does all sorts of stuff, anything you could shoot at the inside a national park. So welcome, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah, a couple of Chris's, right? That's a good thing.
It's going to be easy.
Yeah. So, welcome to Out of Chicago, and we're going to talk about all sorts of stuff. We're going to help people today with shooting national parks, and we're going to talk about your book and kind of all, your journey to creating this whole thing, which I'm sure there's a lot behind it, and we're going to talk about some of the favorite national parks and everything like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
My favorite topic.
Exactly. And actually, we're going to have you, and this isn't even officially announced necessarily, but we are doing an Out of New York conference. You live in New York City, is that right?
I do. I live in Astoria, Queens.
That's right. And we are going to have you as one of our instructors at the Out of New York photography conference, and you're going to be talking about national parks. So we're super excited about that. It's going to be good. So tell us a little bit. Let's start with the book. So it's Photographing National Parks. You talk about all the different parks you've been to, kind of favorite ones for different places, best things to shoot at each one. What led you to write this book in the first place?
It was a funny thing. I was doing a lecture about photographing the parks, and they introduced me and said that I was writing a book, and I wasn't. And a few days later, I was having drinks with a publisher that I've done some work with, and I told him this funny story, and he looked at me dead serious and said, Chris, that's a great idea for a book. So that's how it started. And just the more I thought about it, you know, it was kind of one of those, I don't know, epiphany moments where just every day more and more ideas were popping into my head. So it was clear that it was a book I needed to do.
Yeah, one of those ideas, you're like, what about this? And they're like, oh, and that would be great. Oh, and that would be great.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was like. It was just, I've loved the parks for such a long time. And, I think they're great as shooting locations and just to visit. So the passion was already there. And I probably should have thought about writing the book before the idea was put in my head from the outside.
Right. Yeah. It was like there all along and it was, there, that's what a great idea. So yeah, I bought your book from Amazon. It's great.
Thank you.
Of course. So just Photographing National Parks, search that on Amazon and you'll find it. And I'm just flipping through it. I mean, it's amazing photos, everything from, wildlife down in the Everglades to some just fantastic landscapes. And then there's things like here, I'm seeing like Smoky Mountains, I'm guessing, and Grand Tetons, more like the tiny landscapes, like they'd say. So you've kind of done everything here, and it gives people some great ideas. Here's my first question about writing the book. Like, how many of the places had you been to before you decided, yeah, this is going to be a book? And how many of them did you actually have to go out and shoot after that?
I think the only one that I went to shoot specifically for the book was Kungari National Park in South Carolina. Everything else was from work that I had already done, both photographically and the knowledge that's in the book, kind of the locations that I share, et cetera.
So were you shooting professionally the what you were going for here? I mean, these look like they were made, to go into a publication or to be, they look like they were shot for the book, like they're just perfect for it. Like what were you doing to put that much time into it without this project in mind?
Well, I've been shooting the parks for about 20 years. Going to them even longer. When I was a kid, actually my first park when I was 1 year old when my parents brought me to Carlsbad Caverns National Park on a cross-country drive. Why they were doing a cross-country drive with a one-year-old is beyond me. But
my parents did the same. I think we went to the Smoky Mountains. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But now I can say I was in a park at one. But yeah, even as a kid, we were camping Great Smoky Mountains, Shenandoah, Blue Ridge Parkway. It was just kind of part of growing up, spending time in the outdoors. And then in college, right at the end of college, I did a senior project, a book about a friend and I drove cross country. And I wasn't really serious in the photography yet, but it was something I was beginning to take seriously. And my friend was a photographer. So we spent 2.5 weeks driving across the country, and we didn't plan it this way, but we found ourselves stopping at a lot of national parks. And I kind of developed, I fell in love with them for a whole different reason now, and that was as a photography subject. So I did end up working as a photographer, and I didn't get a lot of opportunities to shoot parks as an assignment, because it just wasn't the kind of client I had. But I did do a pretty good job of kind of working it in sometimes. So, for instance, I was sent to Tennis Magazine. I did a lot of work for Tennis Magazine, and they sent me to Marco Island to cover some tennis stuff. And I had said to the art director, Marco Island is right outside the western edge of the Everglades, so we should probably cover that. And, the art director said, oh, well, that's a great idea. Yeah. So, and I did the same thing with Palm Springs and Joshua Tree National Park. I would try to work it in if I was doing some kind of a travel assignment. And if I wasn't and I had time, I might go to a park anyway, just because I liked doing it. Everybody says if you're a photographer, you have to shoot for yourself too. And that was usually the topic that I picked. If I could get it in my schedule, I would go to a park up in Connecticut. And Acadia was relatively easy access for me. So I would just head up there sometimes. And if I was traveling somewhere for a client for any reason, if it was near a park, I would try to visit, if even if just for a day. You know, better if I could do it for a week. But any opportunity I had, I would jump on.
Now, when you're doing these, are you staying at lodges? Are you a camper? Are you staying outside the park? Where are you usually staying?
All of the above. My preference is to camp for a couple of reasons. One, like I said, I grew up doing that with my family, so I have an affinity for it anyway. But from a photography perspective, camping really allows you to get close to your subject. And I mean that in a figurative and literal way. I mean, figuratively, we can talk about kind of being one with nature and one with your subject and all that. But more importantly for me is the literal sense. If I want to be at a certain spot for sunrise and I'm staying in a hotel outside the park, or maybe in the one lodge that's in the park, but it's on the other side of the park and is a 2-hour drive away, then that's a lot more work to get to that location. Whereas if I'm camping, I might be right at the spot I want to shoot in the morning, or if I'm at a campground, I might be just 10 minutes away. So it makes the travel a lot more flexible.
All right. So, Chris, when you are going to these places, are you researching ahead of time? Are these all places you've been to before? Like, how do you know, like, kind of like the places? I mean, at this point, I'd recommend to people get the book, Photographing National Parks. But what did you do before that?
Well, yeah, I agree. I think getting the book is an excellent idea.
Yeah, I thought you might agree.
Yeah. I always do research before I go. And I recommend that anybody who's going to tackle a national park shoot for any reason do at least some research before you go. You know, especially if you're doing a paid shoot, of course you're going to do it. But even if you're just going for fun or for a personal project, it can be a lot of fun to just jump into a new place without knowing anything about it. And I get that. But especially if you're going to do photography, the parks, they're so big and they have so much to offer that I can pretty much guarantee that if you go there without doing some research, you're going to miss something that you would have loved. And there's so many great places these days to find information. You know, there's books, there's photographers who, you know, they have websites. You find a photographer who lives an hour outside of Yosemite, and he or she would probably have some great information in their blog about it. Another great tool is using Google Images or Flickr, and you can just go on and search for a park that you're researching, and you can see all the work that people have been doing, even just for the last week. So, you know, if you were going to go to Zion in the fall, you could actually go and see where all the color is right now. And that can help you plan a shoot. The flip side is that some photographers don't like to shoot what everybody else is shooting, and that's fine. But that knowledge is still useful, because if you want to shoot something different, then it's valuable to know what everybody else is doing. And I love Flickr just because there's so many really good photographers on there of all levels. So you can find some really good ideas too. And I don't ever advocate copying ideas, but there's nothing wrong with being inspired by somebody else's vision.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you have a tip for, you know, you go and you see all the same shots over and over. Have you got some tips for maybe shooting from a certain location that and make it look a little different, or to slightly go to a different location? What do you do to try and get something that's different than everyone else?
One of the things I try to do is do what everybody says not to do. You know, for everything I say about researching, you know, and reading a book and reading somebody's ebook on it and checking the forums and all that, it's great information. And I listen to it, but I also try to take note of anybody or any common themes, you know, don't do this, don't do this, and just go give it a shot, you know, and see what happens. One of the examples that always sticks with me is the Yellowstone Falls. The view from Artist Point is one of the most famous views in all of the national park system, and it's been photographed to death. But I read some things about it before going there my second or third time, and one of the common knowledge is shoot in the morning because that's when the light's hitting the falls and you might be able to get a rainbow in the mist and all this. And that's what everybody says, everything you read, shoot in the morning, shoot in the morning, shoot in the morning. And I was there for 10 days on this trip and I had the time. So I said, you know what, I'm gonna buck that and go try it in the afternoon. I want to see what it looks like, why nobody's shooting it. And I thought it was great. It was kind of backlit, so it wasn't an easy exposure, but the nice warm light at the end of the day that was kind of bouncing off the canyon walls and just lighting the top of the waterfall. And I liked that look a lot. So that would be my big tip, is listen to what everybody's doing and go try something different.
Yeah, it doesn't mean do something totally different, but take like that great location and put one little thing to it that's different and that make your shot a little different. I like it.
Yeah.
That's good. You talked about following other photographers and seeing what they're doing and following their blogs if they live near a place. Who are some of your favorite photographers that you'll follow?
I like Clyde Butcher a lot. He's his nickname is the Ansel Adams of the Everglades. And if you see his work, you'll know exactly why. It's almost like Ansel Adams came back and is shooting on the East Coast now. But he does great black and white, large format work with great shadows. He's a master at using clouds to define a landscape photo. And if you've ever shot in South Florida, you know how great the clouds can be there. I love his work. And if you're in the Everglades or in Big Cypress or even in Naples, Florida, he has a couple galleries down there, and his prints are just amazing to look at. I also like Jim Brandenburg up in Minnesota. I remember reading about him in National Geographic. Geez, it was sometime in the 90s when he did his Chasing the Light project, where he for 90 days shot only one frame every day. And it was just a personal challenge for him, and National Geographic loved what he did. And he kind of captured my attention then, so I still follow him a bit. Michael Melford, another National Geographic photographer, he seems to get assigned to the parks that I like to shoot. So I always like looking at his work and seeing, you know, what I didn't see. Another one I like a lot, and he's actually got a book coming out this year, is QT Luong. He was interviewed on the Ken Burns documentary on the national park. He was the photographer who they cut to now and then. And QT has – his claim to fame is that he's the first photographer to shoot all 59 national parks large format. And that's really an accomplishment because, you know, it's one thing to shoot a park like the Smoky Mountains, where, you know, you can get out of the car and get a good photo by accident. But to go to like Kobuk Valley in Alaska, where the only way you can get in is to be flown in or take a boat on the river through the park, which is what he did. And to bring large format equipment and spend a week and a half in a boat going through, the middle of nowhere, that's really something else. And the other thing I like about QT is he's got such a passion for the parks, not just as photography subjects, but as places. And if you read his blog, you can really get that passion. And even though he's talking about the photography, the way he writes about it just really shows his love for these environments.
So you're talking a lot about these guys' equipment and everything. What do you shoot with? Are you doing all this large format stuff? What do you use?
I am not doing any large format. I'm not even doing medium format. No, I'm all 35 millimeter digital. I shoot Nikon, primarily the D3S. Funny, I still carry my D2X with me. You know how some people have what they call their bird lens? It's like the D2X is like my bird camera because the you get that the crop factor of the DX sensor.
Right.
So I don't use it much anymore, but it's still in the bag. And I'll use the D4. And you know what? The D800 and the D810 is a great camera, too. I've been doing more night work lately.
How many cameras do you have? Jeez.
Well, I don't own everything. You know, I'll borrow, Nikon Professional Services. I might borrow something. Or if there's something I really, really want to get my hands on, I might rent it.
Gotcha.
Or borrow it from a friend. That's
of course. It's always a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got a couple of those, yeah.
A couple of friends?
Yeah, they have nice cameras, exactly, nicer than mine. So what lenses are you taking when you go out on a typical trip?
The ones I always have, I've got three zooms I carry with me, a 17 to 35, 28 to 70, and an 80 to 200, and that covers most of what I do. I do own a 300-28, and I bring it with me maybe half the time. But I don't want to deal with the weight unless I know I'm going to use it. In fact, in December, I had to do a shoot in Death Valley, and I brought the lens with me, and on the last day realized that I'd been carrying the 300-28 through the airport and on the trip and never even took it out of the bag. So the guy I with could tell you this. I made a point on the last day there to do something with the 300 because there was no way I was going to waste all that effort.
And did you get anything good with it?
Yeah, I did. I don't know if I got anything portfolio worthy, but Death Valley is such a great landscape park.
Yeah.
And you know, with the 300, you can do the compacted landscapes. And I did some of that, some of the rock formations in Badwater Basin. If you look up at the sides of the valley, I did some of the rock formations there with the telephoto. And then the other lens I always have with me is the 105 macro, which I don't use nearly enough. It is such a great lens, so sharp, but it's always in the bag.
And I assume you have a nice tripod. Do you and ball head in that? Do you use a travel tripod for most of these things, or do you just suck it up and bring a big tripod?
Sort of in between. I have the Gitzo, it's the 3541, is that the number? So
yeah.
It's kind of right in that mid-range. It's sturdy enough to, I think it, you know, can support 40 pounds.
I had that exact same one. I just sold it like 2 months ago. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So you know, it's a great trap, but it's still light enough to carry around. So I wouldn't call it a travel one, but it's not heavy duty either. So that's what I use, and I use the for a ball head the really right stuff. It's the BH-51. Is that the 50, model number?
I want to say 55, but yeah,
55, uh-huh.
50 something. Yeah,
yeah, uh-huh. it's their top one.
Yeah,
you know, with support, I think it's one of those things you learn after you're a photographer for a while that you don't. That's not where you save your money.
And honestly, like I could be, I don't know Nikon as well, but I'd guess that some of those lenses you were talking about, I don't think they were like top of the line, at least, you know, not like 2.8, whatever. Maybe I'm wrong there, but that tripod that you're talking about, like you really can't get any better than that. So you're putting your money into that tripod without a doubt.
Yeah, the tripod and the ball head.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and those lenses, by the way, I didn't mention, those are actually all 2.8 lenses. What they're not is they're, I don't always buy the most recent lens just because it's new. So like I mentioned, I use the 80 to 200. That, I mean, pretty much anybody who knows Nikon is going to know that that's not a new lens. But it was great for the work I was doing 10 years ago, so there's really no reason it's not great for the work I'm doing now. That's not to say that the new lenses don't have a lot to offer. I love the VR and all that, but they're not necessary for the work I do. So I don't upgrade to the new stuff just because of the bells and whistles.
That's perfect. Yeah. But you got a great tripod ball head. You got to have that for that landscape. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. All right. I want to get to the part that I've really been wanting to ask you about. So of all the parks, well, first off, how many of the parks have you been to? How many do you say there are? How many have you been to?
There's 59 and I've been to about half. I can never remember the exact number. It's always in flux, always in motion.
So you got a little work to do. That's good, though, but that gives you something to shoot for. What are your favorite parks overall, your favorite couple parks?
Okay, I love Acadia. I mentioned before that I you know, I grew up in Connecticut, so that was the one that was easiest for me to get to. And therefore, it's the one I've been to the most. And, you know, you mentioned before about shooting all the parks. That's a great goal for somebody who wants to do it. But I actually would push people more toward really learning a place. And that's where I am with Acadia, is that's the one I know the best, which gives me kind of some, I don't know, what you'd call it, insider knowledge, intimate knowledge, to really plan your shoots and to really know when the weather is going to be good and what times of year to be there and all that. So I like Acadia for that reason. I also like Olympic National Park in Washington because it has three very distinct and ecosystems that all seem to come packaged with the best light to shoot them in. So you've got the rainforest, which is almost always cloudy, and you know overcast conditions are great for shooting in the forest. You've got the mountains, which have these beautifully clear sunrises and sunsets, and then down on the coast, the sea stacks at the end of the day, you often have a fog that rolls in, and if it's overcast, you've got great tide pools there. So those are the reasons I like Olympic, and it's just beautiful. But overall, if a photographer were to say to me, "What, you know, I can only shoot one national park in my life, which one should I go to?" It's Yellowstone. And it, you know, it doesn't, like, Yellowstone doesn't have the best of a lot of things. Like, I wouldn't say it's the best landscape park by any means, but the landscapes are good. It's probably not the best wildlife park, but it's amazing for wildlife. Plus, you've got the geothermal features, the geysers and the hot springs. You've got wildflowers. You've got mountains. You have valleys with rivers flowing through them. It's like anything you'd want to shoot as a photographer is at Yellowstone. So you can go for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and I promise you, you're never going to get bored. You're never going to run out of something new. In fact, I can say, I mentioned before, I did a 10-day trip to Yellowstone a few years ago. And, you know, I might be shooting landscapes for a couple days and start to get a little bored of that. So I actually completely switched gears one day and said, you know what, I'm going to shoot just wildlife today. And it's great to be in a place where you have that option. And then another day I said, you know what, I'm only going to shoot the hot springs and the geysers. So it's really nice to be able to have so many subjects at your disposal, like Yellowstone provides, so that you could really be doing something different that's stirring different creative juices literally every day.
Yeah, I was going to ask, one of my questions was going to be, if you could pick one park, you know, to stay for a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, it sounds like it would be Yellowstone. Is that right?
Yeah, well, I've done it for that length of time a couple of times now, so I might pick a different one. But
if you were like suggesting, I said, to someone else,
if
yeah.
somebody said to me one park, that's the one I'd send them to.
That's great. All right, so let's focus in on a couple of things. We're not into wildlife photography. Where are the best places to go for landscapes overall? You said Yellowstone's great, but it's not the best for landscapes. What's your favorite just for getting great landscape shots?
For getting great landscapes, it's an often overlooked park, not by everybody, but in the grand scheme of things, Grand Teton is not one of the first parks that comes to mind for people, but it is excellent for landscapes. I always say, because I actually had this thought while I was there, you know how sometimes you're walking around, your camera's on your shoulder, and you've left it on, and it kind of bumps your hip or something in just a perfect way so that it takes a picture?
Sure. Maybe Grand not a perfect picture, but yes.
Yeah. Well, in Grand Teton, that's still a perfect picture. It's, you know, the landscape is just dominated by the mountains, but they're beautiful. And anywhere you go in the park, you can use the mountains either as your primary subject or as a background for something else, for wildlife, or there's the barns on Mormon Row. They've got the buck and rail fences, which are they're very defining of the landscape there, and the river and the trees and everything. So there's a lot of great landscape opportunities there. And then the parks in Alaska, I mean, it's hard to beat those. A lot of people would probably say Yosemite as well, mm-hmm. For not so much for its variety, but the Yosemite Valley is arguably the most beautiful spot in North America, in the United States anyway. You know, it's so great that it actually started the national park movement. That one spot is kind of what got things going.
Right. I think I'm looking at it on my iMac desktop wallpaper right now. Yes.
Yes, I know the image you're talking about. I see it on everybody's Mac.
Yeah. So, absolutely. So that makes sense. So that's kind of got like maybe two or three amazing spots, but somewhere like Grand Teton, you can go to more places and kind of set up more of your own compositions, it sounds like.
Yeah. I'd say there's more variety in Grand Teton. You know, what's another one that gets overlooked a lot is Kings Canyon. It's kind of run as the sister park to Sequoia, which is completely different. And a lot of people have heard of Sequoia National Park, but not of Kings Canyon, which is literally right next to it. I mean, their boundaries butt right up against each other, and it's just great Sierra Nevada mountain landscapes there, including parts of the park that you can hike into and not see another person all day or, you know, for a week. And along the same lines is North Cascades National Park up in Washington, which is in the, you know, the northern reaches of the mountain of the Sierra Nevadas. The Cascade Range up there. But again, it's not it's one of the least visited parks, and it's only, I mean, it's just barely a couple hours outside of the major city of Seattle. But just amazing mountain landscapes there.
So let's switch gears then the other way around. What about best places for wildlife? And I'm surprised you said that wasn't Yellowstone either.
Well, Yellowstone has a good variety of wildlife that is not going to be hard to find. Bison, for example, you can't spend an afternoon in Yellowstone without coming across a good herd of bison. And, you know, even saying that, there's still a great photo opportunity because they're, you know, one of the animals that are kind of iconic of the parks. But they also have the bears. You know, you spend a couple days there, you're going to see a bear, a grizzly, a black bear. There's mountain goats. It seemed to be an endless shoot with a ram there at one point that was just laying in the grass about 50 yards off the road. They get some birds flying through there. And there's a good population of wolves. They're not easy to find. You can't go, you're not supposed to go looking for them. So you kind of have to be lucky or have a really good guide to find them in a legal way. So there is a lot of wildlife there, but there's so many great wildlife opportunities in the park that's the only reason that I said it's not the best. And it's almost easier to break it down by animal. So, you know, if you wanted to photograph grizzly bears, then you'd probably want to go to a park like Katmai up right in Alaska, mm-hmm. Which is kind of the really famous spot for shooting them. You know, probably half the grizzly photos that you see in advertising were shot in one spot in that one park. And then, you know, if you want to photograph the birds, particularly wading birds, it's hard to beat the Everglades, especially in the spring. There's so many birds there, and they're so accessible to photographers, plus the light's great. Yeah, it's kind of animal by animal what you want to shoot, and there's going to be a great park to go find them.
That makes sense. What if you wanted to photograph fish? You mentioned underwater photography. What's this all about?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a few parks that are primarily underwater. Biscayne National Park in Florida, I think, is, if I remember correctly, 95% underwater. And Dry Tortugas National Park, which is also in Florida. You get some coral reefs, there's some shipwrecks. You also get shipwrecks up at Isle Royale National Park in Michigan in mm-hmm. the lake. The best spot, in my opinion, for underwater photography is Channel Islands National Park in California, because around the islands in some spots are what they call kelp forests. So you get underwater, whether diving or snorkeling, and the kelp can be up to 100 feet deep, but they're just it's almost like looking at the redwoods, but underwater. And, you know, they're smaller, obviously, but it just in terms of you can do what you'd think of as your traditional forest photography, but with underwater kelp. And it's just really an amazing sight. If you haven't seen this, just Google that or go on Flickr and put in Channel Islands kelp forest, and you're going to see some amazing underwater work.
This sounds terrifying to me, but I'll believe you that it's great. it sounds like claustrophobic almost. Underwater enough is it's enough for me. So, okay, yeah, crazy. Okay, good. So there's underwater national parks. So we've learned that. We got a bunch of other favorites here. Let's talk a little bit more about the book.
Okay.
I feel like there's a lot of photographers out there. Like, I was kind of in the same boat. I'm like, I go down to Chicago all the time and shoot, and I'm doing tons of research on it. You know, hey, how about I put together, I ended up doing the Photographer's Guide to Chicago. So you're doing the same thing, but it's with all the national parks. What was the most difficult part about writing this? And do you have like tips for people that are thinking, hey, you know, I shoot this, I know this place better than anyone else, I could write something on this. What was the hardest part? What tips do you have for people?
I think the hardest part to writing a book, and I've been a writer my whole career too. I actually started as a writer and photography came second. The hardest part of writing a book is how long a process it is. Even if you're accustomed to writing shorter pieces, whether for a blog or for assignment, you know, you can kind of think, oh, well, I can write 500 words and a book is just going to be 100, 500 word pieces. And it's not. It's a completely different animal. And one of my favorite quotes is, I forget who said it, but they were talking about writing a book. And they said, writing a book is like driving a car at night. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. And that is such a perfect analogy because you know, the most prolific writer probably can't do more than 2 or 3,000 words a day, which is barely a dent in a book. But you do it every day, and in a couple months, a few months, however long it takes you, you will have a book. So it's a long-term project, and it takes dedication and discipline, and there are times that you're just going to feel like you're never going to finish. But just stay at it, and you do, and you get to that last word, and it's a great feeling.
So for a book like yours, you must have written out an organization ahead of time and say, you know, these are the places I'm going to do, and these are the things I'm going to talk about for each one. Would you say, like, today I'm going to get, like, two of them written, or how would that work usually?
Yeah, there's two parts to the book that are organized very differently. So the first part of the book is more how-to. So there's some techniques. I give some ideas about some research and wilderness survival and ancillary gear to make a shoot go easier. So that was different. The second half of the book, which is more what you're talking about, is writing about the locations, where I write about all 59 national parks. That was very much a goal of, okay, I'm going to get two of these written today. I'm going to get three, one, however much time I had and how much research I had to do. That was the hardest part of the book for me to get through. In fact, that half of the book was not in the original outline. That occurred to me shortly after I started writing the book. I realized I was going to have to write that.
Yeah,
it wasn't supposed to be a travel guide. It was supposed to be more of a how-to. And it was one of those ideas that it came to me and I said, oh, that would be so much work. And the next day it came to me again and I said, oh, that would be so much work. And after a few days, I realized that, oh, it's going to be so much work was not the reason not to do it. It had to be in the book. It was kind of a moment of dismay and happiness that, well, okay, I found a way to round this book out nicely.
Yeah, no, and it does. You got to have it. It's great. How about, this is a special year for the national parks, right?
It is. That's the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service.
And what are there special events going on? What do they got going? Anything?
There's a lot going on. The National Park Service has been working on this for a while. In fact, I imagine they've been seeing this as an opportunity because the attendance at the parks overall has been diminishing as baby boomers are kind of aging out of the vacation years. So the National Park Service has been trying to get young people more interested, and this has been a great opportunity for them. So sometime last year, they launched this, you may have seen it on Twitter and Facebook, this Find Your Park movement. So that's a hashtag, Find Your Park, just encouraging people to get out. And some of the corporations have been getting involved too. Subaru's been doing a big push. REI has been doing a lot with the national parks too. They just released an app, actually, that's the information is largely crowdsourced, so people can write in with secret spots and hidden trails and all that. It's a free app. I'd recommend checking that one out. But yeah, so there's all these events going on. Every park has been kind of organizing some things, and I've been in touch with a bunch of them to try to keep track of the events that might be in, of interest to photographers. And there are a bunch out there. In fact, Acadia, right now, I believe it started just in the last couple of days. They're doing a winter photography retreat that's being led by. I'm drawing a blank on her name, but she was an artist in residence there 3 times and wrote the book Photographing Acadia National Park.
That would be Colleen Minuix-Berry. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at her book right now too.
Oh, okay. and she, so she's doing, I believe, 2 of these winter photography retreats, and those are related to the centennial. There's stuff going on everywhere. Another cool one, we were talking about Carlsbad Caverns before. There's a narrow window in July when sun shines directly through the surface and hits the bottom of a cavern, and you can photograph this shaft of light, and they're doing some kind of a photography tour based around that. And there's all different sorts of events. They're doing some great night things too, including some night photo workshops in I think Lassen Volcanic, if I remember correctly, is doing a public night photography workshop out in the park as part of the centennial. But you can go, it's easy enough to find on Google. The National Park Service has a website that's kind of a hub for all these events. And if you live near a park, just check the park website or give them a call and find out what's going on. Cause there's a lot of exciting stuff happening this year. Yeah, opportunities that are new and different than what you found before and different than what you're going to find after this.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. Yeah, we'll pay attention to all those. But you started to talk there about some night photography things. That kind of leads us into what you've been doing. Tell us all about this new project that you're starting.
Well, it's with 4 other photographers, and the project is National Parks at Night. What we're doing is night photography workshops in the national parks. And we're doing every park only once. So we're starting in May with Acadia, and we're going to do 5 a year. So I figure this is going to be a 12-year project, maybe 13 if they add some new parks in that time. We're going to go to these places. We're going to spend, 3, 4, or 5 days and nights, more importantly, nights there, photographing. I'm working with some great, I'm very lucky to be working with the people I'm working with. I'm very fortunate that they asked me to do this with them. But Gabe Biederman, who's based in New York, and he's got a great night photography book. Matt Hill, who does some really interesting night photography portraiture based in New York City. Tim Cooper, who lives out in Montana. Talk about a lucky guy. He lives midway between Glacier National Park and Yellowstone. What I wouldn't give to live there. And Lance Kaimig, who lives up in Massachusetts, who is one of the Zen masters of night photography. He has an excellent book too that's just in its second edition. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm really looking forward to working with everybody. It's going to be an adventure.
You got like the best of the best there. The guys that know the national parks, the guys that, like you said, like the best of the best for shooting night photography. This is going to be amazing. Yeah, I've read Gabe's book. He's fantastic. He's going to be teaching at our New York thing as well. So yeah, that's going to be a ton of fun. So you said the first one is coming up in May. What are the dates? What'd you say?
It starts on May 2nd. It's the 2nd to the 7th, and that's in Acadia National Park. So that's our our big launch. And then also in May, later in the month, we're doing Zion National Park, and that's Tim Cooper is leading that one. I believe Tim and Lance are doing it.
And you're doing the first one. It's going to be you and Gabe for the first one in Acadia?
Right. And then in the summer, we're doing Crater Lake. And then in the fall, in the same week, we're doing two separate locations, Death Valley and Arches National Park.
So if people want to get more information on that, what's the website?
Nationalparksatnight.com.
Nationalparksatnight.com. And how about it? You know, we're kind of going longer than I wanted to, but I'm going to do this anyway. Real quick, for someone that wanted to go on one of those, they're going to have to make sure they have some of the right equipment as far as lenses, of course, a good tripod. But if you want to be shooting, I assume you're shooting Milky Way and stuff, not the campfire. Right?
We're shooting everything.
Okay, cool. What do you recommend as far as some gear that people want to make sure they have?
We go through this on the website because, you know, night photography is an interesting thing. You know, you can go on a day photo workshop and shoot with pretty much whatever you're used to shooting with. But you're right, night photography does require, in some areas, some special equipment. So, you know, you want a camera that's going to be good at high ISOs. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned before I shoot the D3S a lot, which is fine at night, but that's an example where I would probably opt for the D810, even over the D3S. And prime lenses are a big one, prime lenses.
What do you use when you're shooting at night for that, for a prime lens?
Something wide. I'm about to get a Zeiss lens in the mail, which I'm very much looking forward to bringing that out for a night shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but especially if you're doing Milky Way photography, you need a nice wide lens so you can get some foreground and get the whole Milky Way in the shot. You know, if you live in the cities like you and I do, you can forget how gargantuan the Milky Way is in the sky. You know, you see these photos and it looks like an attainable subject, and then you get out into a dark sky area like Death Valley or Capitol Reef National Park, and you see this thing in the sky and it's just huge, and how are you going to photograph it? And the answer is with a good wide and fast lens.
Yeah. And you want it fast for the stars, right? So that they're not streaking too far. Is that the idea?
Yeah. About the very upper limit shutter speed would be 30 seconds. And it's advisable to really not go over 15 or 20, which means you need to let a lot of light in. You need a fast lens. You got to be shooting it at 2.8. I wouldn't go smaller than f4, you know, but even wider if you can.
Right. Okay, but you said that's all available online, but I know that you need some special stuff to do that. You can't just head out there with your normal kit lens and expect to be able to get that type of shot usually.
Yeah. That said, you can do it. Night photography is not, it's not magic. It's not a mystery. There are some special knowledge that goes with it, but it's stuff you can figure out. If you know how to use your camera, you can go out there and do some good night photography.
Yeah, especially like in the city, but I guess that's different. But yeah, because once you learn that, you get some magical shots just shooting in manual and figuring out how to do that for sure.
Yeah, especially with, you know, modern cameras with digital and you've got the LCD, it makes it so much easier to experiment and learn on the fly.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And say, well, I think I just need to have my shutter speed open, you know, shutter open a little longer or whatever, and you do it. And then you say, yep, that looks better for sure.
Right.
All right, so Chris Nicholson, tell us, where should we go? Where do we find you online here?
I'm at photographingnationalparks.com, and all over social media. I'm easy to find. And if you're interested in this topic, I have a free newsletter. It's a Q&A newsletter that goes out once a week. So feel free to come sign up and bother me with some questions on it.
Nice. We will put a link to that and to your site and to the workshops and all of that in the show notes. Anything else you want to throw our way before we close out here?
Get out to the parks and do yourself a favor, spend some time there. You know, you can go for a day, but geez, if you can go for a week or 10 days and really immerse yourself, I guarantee you, you're going to grow as a photographer while you're there.
Awesome. I love it. All right. Well, I can't wait to hang out at one with you, and I can't wait to hang out in New York City with you and learn more about this. So, yeah, we will talk to you next time. Thanks for coming on the show, Chris.
Thanks a lot for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Talk to you next time.
Okay. Take care.
All right, thank you for listening. I told you he was great, right? All right, there you go. Chris Nicholson, thank you very much for being on the show. And don't forget to sign up for the Winter Conference, February 20th. And Adam Jones is going to be there. It's going to be awesome. Tons of fun, people. Did I say we're having a pizza party after? Well, we are. It's going to be great. Sign up for the pizza party as well at Bill's Pizza. It's going to be great. Fun time. You know, it's not the same thing as the summer one. It's not right downtown, but it's an easy one to get to. It's one day, in and out. Going to be a ton of fun. Lots of new photographers teaching that you haven't seen before. Check out the schedule, outofchicago.com, and I'll see you there. All right. Good night.